I'm going to read my blog to my wife and let you watch me read my blog to my wife. So we'll see how this goes, but that's the different thing. Let me know in the comments. I have my blog at patreon.com/CMichaelPatton. You can check it out there. It's called Will the True Church Please Stand Up? But my wife, she just wanted to be on so badly that I went ahead and let her. She just loves to hear my blogs. She just loves to hear me teach, as you can only imagine. So watch us do this.
Theology. Unplugged.
Also, we edit it the entire time. You know, like, I'll go back and I edit stuff in and edit stuff out. Okay. Just act like yourself. Like you do with me.
Okay.
And you could be mean to me like you're always mean to me.
Okay.
That'll be, just don't be as mean as normal. Okay. My goal is.
How come we're not on the camera?
Because I don't want you looking at the camera. You'll be tempted to look at the camera the whole time.
I won't.
Yes, you will. You're facing towards it. I would even do that. Okay.
Now I'll worry about myself. I'll be more nervous. Just try it one more time.
No, let's go. Ready?
Hey.
This is the first time that I am doing this, you all. So you may not even see this, but if you do see this, tell me what you think, because I'm trying to get a little bit of interaction. Oh, this is my wife.
Hi.
This is my wife, Christy. A lot of you guys already know Christy. You at least know of her because I talk about her all the time in the podcast and in my blogs. You know the blogs because you read them sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Or you've read like three. Okay, will the true church please stand up? Who watches the watchman? Online, the idea of the true church is front and center right now. The virtual universe has flipped its coin and decided that this is the controversy of the day. Oh, yeah, you can talk, you know, okay. Right?
Right.
If you want.
Okay.
You don't have to. And you can interrupt me or do whatever, like you always do. In fact, it has become a tsunami, and I'm not disappointed. As I always say, controversy brings clarity, as exhausting as it often is. The simple question is this: who is the true church? Who defines the truth? Who is the true church? Who gets to define the true church? Is it a building or a people or an institution or a body? Or is there even such a thing as the true church at all? Now, I don't know if you've ever thought of that. True church, you know. I guess you probably have, because, right, true denomination or something like that. And if there is, who are its gatekeepers and guardians? Further, who gets to appoint or guard them? Quas custodius ipsos custodies?
I don't like those big words at all.
It's Latin.
I don't like Latin.
Yeah, I know, but it makes it sound like I know what I'm talking about. Then the reason why I put Latin in here in this blog is because I want people to see that this is not something I'm coming up with on my own. It has deep tradition on the idea of who guards the guardians, right? Like
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Hey, yeah, that actually is on Justice League, because Green Lantern says to Batman whenever they form the Justice League, this, who guards the guardians? And that was a good question at the end of the show. Who is going to guard the Super League or the Justice League? Because they're the greatest, right?
Yeah.
And that's the question. And that's why it has deep roots. Translated means who watches the watchman, or more literally, who guards the guards themselves. I mentioned this to introduce the topic, but also to illustrate the tendency to appoint ourselves as sentinels. A sentinel is a guardian, right? As sentinels of truth is not only ancient, but perennial. Every generation seems convinced that it must stand guard over everyone else, right? So just who guards the guardians? I'm the guardian, right? That's the way we think. Well, who determines my church is the true church? I do. Or at that point, you have to say somehow God did, right?
Right.
God said that this church is the true church. But the problem is we don't have anything that says that, right?
Right.
For the moment, however, I want to, and it really is interesting because this is the topic today. It's huge. Everybody's talking about what is the true church, who is the true church, and it's between Protestants, Catholics, and Eastern Orthodox, just like it always is, right? Or that's what it comes down to. For the moment, however, I want to sidestep this important ecclesiastical question of identifying the true church and look at something even more foundational. Okay, here's my thesis. My thesis is simple. When our traditions or denominations see themselves as the gatekeepers of the true church, we are often manifesting a family trait or tradition inherited from a long line of believers of who fail to recognize God at work in their own outside of their own circle. So it's everybody. We always do that. We see our circles as the right circles, and God's not at work in your circles. He's at work in our circles, and we do this individually too, for sure, right? Unless we're really we have a good self-examination. Not only this is this trait common, but also in my experience, every group claiming to be the true church has one thing in common. The people making the claim are also the people who appointed themselves to make the claim. Quis custodia ipsios custodios. I practiced that a long time before, and I don't got it right.
Ken, I don't like the big words.
That was just reminding you that who guards the guardians, right? Because you remember we talked about that. This began long ago in a galaxy. Well, not actually.
It sounds like Star Wars.
I know. Listen. Just see what you think of this. Okay. This began long ago in a galaxy. That has an ellipsis, right?
What's an ellipsis?
Like dot, dot, dot. This began long ago in a galaxy. Well, actually.
Far away.
No, listen. This began long ago in a galaxy. Well, actually, in our own galaxy. That's not that funny. Okay. I get it. And not so far away. That's kind of good, right? Because it's close to us.
Sure.
And really, it was not that long ago at all. I'm going to let you do some of the heavy lifting. I'm going to gloss over a few verses. To gloss means just to kind of explain or paraphrase, right? I'm going to gloss over a few verses, paraphrase a few controversies, and let you decide whether or not there is a pattern. Let's look at the evidence. Okay, episode 1, stop them. The disciples said to Jesus, "Teachers, we saw somebody casting out demons in your name, and we tried to prevent him because he was not following us." Mark 9:38. Translation, "Jesus, we told this guy to stop because he's not one of us," which I think that's funny. This is where it all started for me, was whenever I'm thinking of this one true church, this is all I go to in my mind, is this verse, Mark 9:38, where the disciples, you know, they're with Jesus, somebody else is preaching Jesus, and they said, "Hey, there's a guy over there preaching, we told him to stop, and he won't." Why would you say something like that, you know? Jesus responded, "Do not hinder him, for he who is not against us is for us." Now, that's really a large circle that Jesus is drawing. You know what I mean? He who's not for us is against us.
Right.
Oh, I did put that in here. They draw a large circle. Jesus, no, listen to this. This is how I put it. The disciples draw the circle tightly. Jesus erases it. That's pretty good, right?
I like it.
All right. Okay, episode 2, burn them. Then there is the Samaritan village. Jesus sent messengers ahead to prepare for his arrival, but the Samaritans are just right beside. They're the, oh God, that would take a long time. They're just kind of half Jews, right? And the Jews don't like them. And they will travel around Samaria so they can stay away from him. Jesus said to the messengers, they're going to Samaria, and Jesus said to the messengers, to go ahead and prepare for his arrival, but the Samaritans would not receive him. James and John, the Sons of Thunder. Have you ever heard them called the Sons of Thunder? Their nickname in the Bible, the Sons of Thunder, because of this. I think it's funny. James and John, the Sons of Thunder, proposed the solution. "Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them?" He's going to want that. "Do you want us to kill these people?" Apparently, rejection of Christ warranted immediate incineration, not to mention an astonishing assumption that they were qualified to play the role of Elijah. Because remember, Elijah called fire down from heaven during that sacrifice window. Episode 3, send them away. The parents were bringing, I'm just giving you illustrations, right, in these episodes. Parents were bringing their children to Jesus, but the disciples were having none of it. The text said they tried to bounce them out of the gathering. But when the disciples saw they were bringing children to Jesus, but when the disciples saw this, they rebuked them, the children and the parents. Why would you do that? Translation, "Jesus, we've got crowd control. You just minister to those who we let in." And that's basically what they're saying, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, again, drawing a true church, true circles. Who's in, who's out? Once again, they appointed themselves as guardians who get to access to they are the guardians of who gets access to the kingdom. Okay. Episode 4, promote us. I love this next one. It is so us, not me and you, but us people, right? Uh-huh. I mean, it is us too. It is so us, humanity at its worst. We are always concerned with our status, our prestige, our centrality or essentiality of in our group or tradition, or including our individual selves, right? I mean, that's what this is in the blog, but that's what Eve did, you know? You will not surely die. You will be like God, you know? So, oh, bigger status. So in Mark 10:37.
Oh, this is Boomer Sooner.
Boom, boom. Boom, boom likes me. He's the only one that likes
Boomer
me.
Sooner in.
This other Dr. one doesn't Pepper. Watch. Hey, boy. Hey, boy. Wait, let me get you on. Hello. Hello. Okay. So they come to Jesus and they say, these are the apostles, right? They come to Jesus and they say, grant that we may sit one on your right hand and the other on your left in your glory, which is so funny. You know, it's just so arrogant. It's just, that's Mark 10:37. And before that, they had been having an argument with one another about which one was the greatest. Okay. So you see the relation here to the true church and how they're doing all this stuff. I mean, we're the main people, you know, we're the best. Our status is higher. Not only are they regulating access to the kingdom, they themselves are also organizing the seating chart, reserving the most prominent seats for themselves. We're close to done. Just in case you're about to fall asleep like you always are, whenever I read to you. I used to read to her. Believe it or not, after we got married. Do you remember right after we got married?
Before we got married.
No, listen to this. This is even worse because I used to come over and just preach to you, right? Yeah. At least
those were our date nights.
Yeah, yeah. But after we got married, you remember the Spurgeon's sermons book, right? I would read to you every night one full Spurgeon's sermon. From beginning to end, in his own, type of English. I don't know how you got through that. That was pretty impressive.
It was torture.
Whenever I was at school, the University of Biblical Studies, I told my professor, something came up where he's like, what did you do last night? I said, well, I mean, my wife read. And he's like, oh, what'd you read? And I go, I just read to her a Spurgeon sermon. And I mean, he was like, okay, you guys are newly married, right? And you're every night reading a full Spurgeon sermon, and everybody in the class laughed. And I thought I was kind of cool and in the inner circle by reading a Spurgeon sermon. But okay, not only are they regulating access, but they're putting together a seating chart. Maybe I'm supposed to be funny here, right? Okay, let me do the whole thing right here to you again, so it's going to be funny. Not only are they regulating access to the kingdom, they are also organizing the seating chart and reserving the most prominent seats for themselves. Maybe they are a Baptist. And what I meant by that is because, like, have you ever been to a Baptist church and they have all the elders sit on the stage while the pastor is preaching, and so everybody's got these prominent spots? I mean, because I grew up Baptist. I'm not criticizing Baptists. Come on. Next, they will be wearing vestments. That's criticizing Roman Catholicism, yeah. And big hats and too close to home. Sorry. Anyway, the reason why I put that is because we're even in church, we're the top, you know, you guys are the bottom. We can wear this. You cannot wear this. You know, we've got the bigger hats. Here's the pattern. And this is the end. Okay. Okay. Let us land this plane. My gloss notwithstanding isn't obvious. Stop them, burn them, send them away, promote us. The disciples repeatedly assume the role of managers, gatekeepers, quality control inspectors, and guardians of the kingdom of God, and yet Jesus repeatedly pushes back. Now, I'm not saying there are not boundaries. There definitely are. There is a right and a wrong. There is truth and error. There is inside and outside. In fact, let me change my mind for a minute and say this. There are no lines. There's only a center. Now, what I'm trying to do is, you know, you draw the line and erase it. I'm saying, no, let's do this a different way. Let's talk about a center that keeps, you can erase lines, but as long as you're close to the center, that's the way. And I think that's the way Christ puts it. You know, it's not, there's so much ambiguity in the Bible with a lot of this stuff, you know, and so much freedom in church. There's a book I read called The Dangerous Idea, and that's by Alistair McGrath. And he's talking about the Protestant Reformation mm-hmm. and how many denominations there are. And he basically, in the end, comes to what most people would say is a heretical idea, is that there are many differences because there are different type of people. And the church is very elastic. God didn't tell us what to do. He told us who to follow. Mm-hmm. There's only center. That is much cleaner, far less legalistic, and much closer to the way Jesus taught. What is the center? What is the anchor that keeps us close to truth? It's Christ. The center is not a denomination, not a tradition, not a Baptist, not a Pope, not a confession, not a council. Well, what if I say not a confession? This is a confession, right? So it's not all the, it's a, not a super long confession. It's pretty darn short confession, as a matter of fact, which if you remember when we first got married, I was much different about this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like, there are so many people who get stuff wrong, and the wrong stuff will send you to hell.
Yes.
Quickly. And Catholics were for sure going to hell.
Yes.
Jesus put it this way. Who do you say that I am? The disciples first responded by telling him that what everybody else was saying. Some said John the Baptist, because he asked the apostles. You know, he just turns around Matthew chapter 16 and says, who are people saying that I am? Which is really interesting, because who would ever do that? Like, if I turned around while somebody's following me and say, people say that I am, like, Michael, a person, you know, it's like, but the thing is, you would think that's what they would say, something like that, but they're already, everybody's coming up with different Jesuses. Mm-hmm. There's already five right here, I think. Yeah. Some say John the Baptist, some say John had died. So some say John the Baptist risen from the dead. Some say Elijah, of course he was dead, but he got assumed up to heaven. So people are saying maybe he came back. Some say Jeremiah. I don't know why they would say Jeremiah. And some say one of the prophets. Take note, as hard as it is to believe, while Christ was physically walking this earth, there was already competing camps, competing interpretations, and competing answers. So there is definitely such a thing as getting it right or wrong. I'm not relativizing belief by critiquing the idea of the one true church. So I'm not saying there's not, let's just, all these people are right about Jesus. No, there was wrong, right? Mm-hmm. But it's about Jesus. That's it. It's about, who do you say that I am? That's what it's about. Okay, look, it's very short. That's okay.
Sure.
Then Peter answered, obviously, people don't get the idea that we do this a lot. Then Peter answered, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Remember, he turns around to Peter and he says, who do you say that I am, right? Who do people say that I am? And then he says, who do you say that I am? Which I think is the most important question there is in the world. You get that right, you're in. You get that wrong, you're out. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Being the Christ speaks of his work. Being the Son of God speaks of his person. So there's the person and work of Christ is the center. And what are we talking about, the person and work of Christ? What do we mean? Who do you say that I am? And what do you say that I did? Right? That's it.
Right.
That is ultimately what defines the true church. Who do you say that I am? What do you say that I did? He accomplished. What do you say he accomplished? Get the center wrong and everything else eventually drifts. Get the center right. Despite all of our imperfections, we will find ourselves gathered around the same Lord and in the true church. That wasn't that hard.
No, it wasn't bad.
All right. Any questions? You're representing the audience.
Probably thinks. Probably thinks.
Theology 101.